ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brian behind the glass. It is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. People are so mad they're already calling in. People are so mad with the Astros, they're already calling in. 713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776. As we often do on every Monday during baseball season, we start with the good, the bad, and the ugly. Bad and ugly kind of morph together. But what is your good? What is your bad? What is your ugly? 713-780-3776. And I have an idea of where we're going to be spending most of our time.
I kind of do, too. It's pretty obvious after the fact that when you were out Friday, Brian and I had a conversation. Brian's level of desperation was a lot higher than mine. He said, how adamant were you that you needed a sweep? And I said, as long as they win the series, I would be fine with it. And I did not expect them to go 1-2.
I'm never in sweep mode, ever. Unless you absolutely have to have it, like, into the season where you have to win three. You're chasing three games with three games left to play. Asking for a sweep to me in baseball is not fair. It's not fair to anybody. It's not fair to the best team in baseball when they're going up against the worst team in baseball. You win series. That's what you do in baseball. You win series. And the Astros should have won this series. And what's interesting, we'll get to all the good, the bad, and the ugly, 713-780-3776, but just like a thought, like an epiphany, really, maybe not even an epiphany. It's more like the margin of winning and losing and what it does for like the fans' perspective and feelings on things. Ryan Pressly gets a save on Saturday. We're talking about a series win today. Yeah, you lose on getaway day yesterday, 6-0, but that's much easier to swallow because Javier gets scratched. You're swinging like it's getaway day where you're hacking at first pitches. You get nothing going offensively. You just get three outs on Saturday, and we're like, okay, all right, Astros are back on track, but you don't. You blow a save for a variety of reasons. Then you have the showing that you had on a getaway Sunday, and it changes everybody feeling like that. All you have to do is get three outs Saturday, and we're feeling okay. We're feeling comfortable. Maybe not comfortable. We're feeling okay about this team, okay about the series. You won the series, but you don't get the save there. You lose on Sunday, and everybody is mad, angry, panicked, worried, all the emotions.
There's no doubt about it, because when you think about it, it's the way they went about it, too. They came from behind. They were trailing late in the game. They found a way to get a lead. Then they got an extra run. They got a two-run lead. You were feeling like, get through the ninth inning. This is fantastic. This was a great little comeback win. Maybe this is the next opportunity to not pee down your leg after a big victory and get this train moving in the right direction. And then all of a sudden, Ryan Pressly happened.
Yeah, that was that's painful. I mean, there we go. I mean, that's just a natural segue to the bad, right? Ryan Pressly. And it was like, okay, you pitched a scoreless inning Friday. Okay, we saw a little bit of this last year with Ryan Pressly, where it's like, okay, you started off slow, then you were able to pick it up, and then you became the Ryan Pressly that we all know and love. You threw Stressly, the alter ego, you know, in the back seat. You didn't have to worry about that. And you're thinking, okay, maybe that's what's going on Friday. Scoreless inning, getting back on track. Catcher's interference, get hit all over the baseball park. You can't ever win an extra innings because you're a Houston Astro. Astros can't win extra inning games, which, you know, a lot of people didn't like that Jose Altuve send. But, yeah, Ryan Pressly has been atrocious. And it's all the big three. It's Brian Abreu, who's been pitching a little bit better. Mm-hmm. It's Ryan Pressly. It's Josh Hader. All of the big three has been the little three. They've been your three worst relievers.
Yeah, look, when we started the year, as much as we were just trying to figure out why you went and got an extra closer, you were like, hey, everybody was saying, hey, after the sixth inning, ball game over. This is door shut, lock, stock, and barrel. These three guys, best in the business, look the hell out, rest of baseball. Now and we were talking about the middle of the bullpen being the one concern you have from a pitching perspective. Now we're sitting there looking at it going, the back of the bullpen is just hot trash. Uh-huh. It's garbage. And you can scratch off one of the excuses with everybody kept saying, well, Pressly was conditioned to be a closer. When he's not closing, it's different. He gets a chance to close, and he does the exact opposite of closer. And here we are.
Yeah. I'm worried about Pressly. Hader, I think, is going to figure it out. Like, Hader's stuff still looks live. Like, his lack of command a little bit there. He hadn't been good, but I'm much more confident that Hader's going to figure it out. Pressly, I don't know. He's in his 30s. We saw some signs of this last year. Now, he was able to figure it all out. You know, I don't think that there's a whole lot going. Like, a lot of people, well, he's, you know, pouting because he's a setup guy now, a closer. I don't think he's pouting. Could it affect him mentally? maybe. I don't really put a whole lot of stock in that, but I don't know what's going on between the ears. I would like to think that doesn't bother him. He was a setup guy in the past, but Presley's the one that I'm really worried about. I think Hader will straighten it out. Presley, I don't know.
Well, I think the main reason is because the other two guys have overpowering fastballs. They're dominant with their fastball. So all they have to do is remotely come close to placing their secondary pitch or pitches. And they've got above average major league stuff. They should be able to get guys out. With Presley, you know, he works on control, he works on spin, he works on location, and the location hasn't been great. He doesn't have the control that he's had predominantly since he's been at Astro, and there's plenty of reason to be concerned because of the fact that he's a guy that in the past, like you said, we've seen these hiccups before. We've seen game-winning home runs. We've seen him come in, and instead of shutting the door, he's putting kerosene on a bonfire. And this is why, as you get later in your career and you look at a guy like this who's in the last year of his deal, I just look at this and go,
well, you know, it might not be.
He's got to get it's vested, right?
So I think it's like 40 games.
Oh, boy.
Which, I mean, he had to appear in 40 games in each of the last. It's 40 or 50. I think it's 40. I'll look it up here real quick. I know it's a vested deal. It becomes guaranteed if he gets 40 or 50 games appeared.
Well,
I mean, you can start having the conversation. It's 45 games appear. Split the difference. He did it last year, so if he does it this year, next year's contract becomes guaranteed. And it's not a player option to where he can opt out of it. It's not a team option. It's a vested. He would be on the book. 14 million.
14? Okay.
$14 million.
Well, then the Astros got to be cognizant of that. He can't keep throwing up all over himself, or you want to make sure that you don't have to pay that next year.
Look, I think that the Astros are going to turn this around and be fine. And I think it's too soon to have, like, are you trading Alex Bregman? Are you trading Kyle Tucker? Are you trading Framber Valdez conversations? I know some people were there already, and maybe it's because they're angry in the moment. I still think the Astros are going to turn this around, to be completely honest. Now, a lot of things have to get better, go right, get healthy, et cetera, et cetera. That's a lot of ifs, I understand. But I think the Astros are too good. I think they will turn this around. But if you don't, let's go there for just a moment. Like, you're probably looking at either A, trading Ryan Presley, and he needs to pitch a lot better the rest of the way if that is going to be an option, or B, if he's pitching so badly where he is not tradable and you don't want to be on the hook for $14 million, hey, Joe Espada, we're going to need you when you call to the bullpen to never go to Ryan Presley in the second half of the year.
Yeah. I mean, you got to make business decisions at a certain point if you're not winning ball games. I like you. I have not lost faith in the fact that this team is going to turn it around. I'm not thinking of, you know, guys to get rid of. I'm thinking about who you can bring in to make this team better. Both you can call up from Sugarland, and you can go out and look at guys that are out there that can possibly help this ball club. I believe too much in this lineup. There's too many talented players all across the board, and there's guys coming back from the injured list. But at a certain point, games like Saturday start to stick with you, and they start to really rub you the wrong way, and it can really start to ruin your day. Like, it ruined the rest of my Saturday, going, you know what, I'm driving around going, I got time now. Presley will close the door in the ninth. I can go run a few errands, pick up dinner, come back to the family. I'm sitting in the car, and I'm punching the steering wheel going, what the hell are we doing?
I think it's a little abnormal behavior here.
No, I don't think so.
Punching the steering wheel? You doing, let's ask the Hive. You were so mad Saturday. What were you doing? Did you punch the steering wheel?
I punched the steering wheel. Damn right I did. It was open-handed. But
what did you do the rest
wheel.
Of the day?
I mean, I got a boatload of stuff done the rest of the day, but I was watching the game for the majority of the game while and waiting for it to finish. Yeah. And when they got to the ninth, I'm like, okay, cool. I told Lisa, yeah, I'll go pick this up. I'll go grab the food, and I'll come back. And then in the car, listening to the game, going, oh, my God, they're going to blow it.
Does it count as a punch if it's open-handed?
Yeah, isn't that more of a slap?
Yeah, I think it's more of a slap. I think you slapped your
Depends on
wall.
Where you hit it. I mean, I got it pretty good with the heel
like
of my
an
hand.
Open, like
yeah,
an open just, palm strike?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I just want to break anything.
That's a good idea. Smart. You're punching your steering wheel in a very wise way.
Yeah.
That is a sign of maturity. You're at least you're at least thinking about the perseverance or preserving your fingers. And
I don't know.
I wasn't sure if I had honked that day yet, so I took it out with a punch. I don't know.
Punch, literal definition, strike with the fist.
Okay. Well, then it was.
So what would that be, though?
That's a palm. You're striking
like
with your palm, what Joel's describing.
Yeah, it's like karate.
It's a shove or a...
Yeah, I don't know what you would call
it's
like that.
It would be like a palm strike.
A palm strike?
Yeah.
There you go. There's the technical term.
I palm struck the steering wheel.
Yeah. Did any of you high palm strike your steering wheel? There's a lot of bads I got. We might spend the first hour doing this.
Yep.
Lose a series to the Nationals. That's obviously up there. This is the first time the Astros have been 9 games under .500 since May 2016. In that game, Mike Fiers lost, and he gave up a dong to Albert Pujols, by the way. So, like, there is that. Last time you've been this far below 500, Mike Fiers was giving up a home run to Albert Pujols in a baseball game. Trout homered too. What do you got?
Well, I got lots. I mean, if we're going, I mean, Hunter Brown was not good.
Yeah.
Hunter Brown, I understand it was kind of short notice to get him out there and get him to start, but Hunter Brown's first inning was not good and not what you expected and what you wanted. You were hoping of the last two starts, the second start would be the one that he'd start to capitalize on and be better. He was okay, but that wasn't the way you wanted to get off to start that game Saturday.
Yeah, not a good start for Hunter Brown. I tip my cap to him a little bit for the way that he responded. Like, mm-hmm. He gives up the three runs or whatever it was in the first inning, and then he pitches three scoreless. Like, okay, I can respect that because it could have very easily turned into Kansas City where you're kind of getting bleedered to death, like little nickel and dime to death, and then he was able to bear down and at least pitch three scoreless innings after that. I didn't think he got hit hard in that first inning. Now, hey, go make a pitch, get out of the inning. Mm-hmm. So I'm not, like, making excuses or letting him off the hook. But in terms of him going forward, this is much better than the Kansas City start because at least he wasn't getting, like, squared up, hit hard, and then he actually, like, you know, bared down and got you through three innings after that. But certainly was not good. Not making excuses. I'm just saying going forward, like, I feel a little bit better for Hunter Brown after that start than I did the Kansas City.
Might have been able to throw left-handed and be better than that Kansas City.
Yeah, that's true. Like, it's a very, very low bar. It is a very low bar, no doubt about it. What stinks about losing that game yesterday for the Astros is, like, it buried the fact that Christian Javier is on the injured list. Like, everybody's so upset that you lost the game, that you lost the series, that you're 9 games under .500 for the first time since May of 2016, that it's like, oh, yeah, on top of that, let's remember that Christian Javier, who's been your second-best starting pitcher this year, has been placed on the injured list because he's sleeping on a brick like Yordan Alvarez did in Tampa Bay. He got placed on the IL for neck issues. Like, that's weird.
It's weird. It was at the most inopportune time. I couldn't believe when I was reading it on Twitter. And that's why under Ugly, one of my under Ugly is the injured list now for the Houston Astros, because it just keeps growing by the day, seemingly. And they're not names that are supposed to be just bench riders and secondary players. These are your main guys, especially from a pitching perspective, that you were going to rely on all year. And as you mentioned, in the case of Javier, he was pitching his tail off. And between him and Blanco, they were all over the place as leaders in pitching categories in the American League. And then all of a sudden on the day of the game, oh, by the way, he's not starting. And not only is he not starting, but he's going on the injured list.
Yeah. Now, like, the Astros have a bunch of off days, and, like, they can retroactive it to where, like, they can kind of navigate this, especially with Verlander. And they call it Arrigetti. They announced the rotation for the next three games. J.P. France pitching tomorrow, Spencer Arrigetti the day after, and then Justin Verlander. So, like, when's Fromber coming back? I thought you said Fromber was going to be back soon here. So that's concerning. He's been your second-best starter. Mm-hmm. Like, this has been another starter on the injured list, like you said. And the guys that you've had on the injured list this year, really good rotation. Maybe the best rotation in baseball.
Maybe the best in baseball.
You have Fromber and Justin Verlander that have been on the injured list. Now Christian Javier joins them, so you have your top three. You have Urquidy, which might not crack your rotation of your injured guys that have tasted the injured list, because you have Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers too. Like, Jose Urquidy is your sixth starter on the injured list starters.
You could put a six-man rotation out there, mm-hmm. that's better than any six pitchers that any other team in baseball, I think, could throw at you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's silly. And the fact is, it's not getting better. It seemingly is getting worse. And that's part of the reason why, when you see all the reasons why this team is just playing such bad baseball and has such a horrible record, because a lot of times they're scuffling to find anybody to grab the baseball and take the bump to start a game.
Yeah. You had something to say, Brian, I think.
If we're just adding in, you know, good and bad, I'll give a good and bad directly from the bullpen. I mean, we could spend probably, like you said, the full first hour on the bad. But Dubin, I'd like to throw in there for the bad. Certainly didn't help matters. Hunter Brown goes short, and he could kind of explain it away because he wasn't expecting, obviously, to start. But then Dubin came in.
Was on full rest, though.
It was on full rest, but still, I mean, guys are creatures of routine, and he wasn't expecting to start. But any chance you had to hang in there and maybe make a rally late was completely given away when Dubin came in and allowed another couple runs. On the other end of that,
not to interrupt. You know what? One minor thing that annoys me that has nothing to do with baseball, that Sean Dubin's on this team.
Sure.
Whenever you say it, it sounds like you're mispronouncing Mauricio Dubon. Like, whenever, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we're talking about Dubin.
I can see that.
Who's Dubin? Like, yeah, Dubon's on this team, not Dubin.
Yeah, I can see
I
that.
Had some minor hope annoyance. Based on his last appearance, because he went multiple innings and he got a bad break at the end, and it basically he gave up runs after he left the game. because of who came in after him.
Yeah.
But I thought that his stuff looked like it was pretty good, and then he just couldn't find the zone.
No, what's yeah, what
I think
there,
he threw like six straight balls at one point when he came into the game. The other one, this is somebody we Joel and I talked about with Todd Callis on Friday, but Rafael Montero, been their best reliever. He goes out and throws another scoreless inning on Saturday, keeps trucking along. I'm not sure. I know his ERA was 180 going into the Saturday appearance, so I'm not sure exactly what it is.
It was one of my goods, too.
164?
Yep.
Yeah, so Montero, I believe he's also leading the league in appearances right now for relievers. So it's not just a couple innings here we're talking about. It's still
earning his money.
It's a small sample size.
Let's slow that down a little. Last year in the first half, they had a guy do that, and then he completely fell off the planet in the second half, Phil Maton.
Yeah, it's just a nice to see because we saw the trend of Montero improve in the second half, and that was one of our talking points this offseason, is which half of Montero would you get? And so far, he's been even better than second half Montero.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. What was your good? What was your bad? What was your ugly? Also, how yesterday's game was the microcosm of the year so far for the Stros. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. ESPN Houston on YouTube. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word for X-Golf and Katie. Look, we know that there's going to be rain in the forecast coming up this week. We know that there are times that you want to hit golf balls and maybe you don't have a range nearby and you don't know where you can go at night to try and get a couple of swings in. Now you know where you can go. It's X-Golf and Katie. Check it out. X-Golf has the best golf simulators I've ever seen, and the only ones in the Houston area are at X-Golf Katie. Go online and check it out. See if you can't reserve a bay and get in there and start getting some swings in. It is phenomenal. As a golfer, if you play at all, you are going to be a big fan of X-Golf because it is real-life golf played indoors. I mean, it measures every shot, the distance, the spin, the direction, everything that you need to know so that you can actually have your real golf game ready to go when you do go back outside. The putting is realistic. The chipping. You can even play your own golf ball right out of your bag so that the feel is exactly the way it's going to be when you get back on the course. And, oh, by the way, on top of that, it's a great sports bar with tons of TV, great food and beverage, and it's a combo platter that you would love if you're a golfer or a sports fan. It's sports bar, it's indoor golf, it's all under one roof. X-Golf Katy is the only place I'm going to tell you to go if you want to get to a golf simulator and hit some golf balls and hang out and watch some great golf or some other sports on TV as well with great food and beverage. Check them out today, X-Golf and Katy.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brian and Joe behind the glass. Killer tag team there. That would win titles, I think. Those two. Look at that. What would we call that tag team? Brian McDonald, Joe George. Now that since Joe's in here, here's a text that we got. Good, bad, ugly, 713-780-ESPN. I didn't realize that Joe was still in there. 8437, I'm not going to call in about it, but Joe George has some trash takes. What'd you say today, Joe? What happened?
Explain it.
You can't explain it.
For some reason, I think the Astros have a better chance to win the division than they do to make the wild card.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's easy to explain. It means the Rangers would have a lesser record than the third wild card team.
I understand, Sean and Paul boxed me into a corner and made me feel like it was a dumb take. So
I mean,
maybe it was.
You could just look at the standings today, though, right? Like, to defend Joe's point, like, what is third place? I looked at this yesterday. I know Texas won, so this might have changed since I looked at this yesterday. But Texas is 12-11 right now, and the third wild card team in the American League is the Boston Red Sox at 13-10. Like, Boston has a better record than Texas does. The current third-place wildcard team has a better record than the AL West leader. Do I think it's going to stay? No, probably
There's
not.
A chance, but...
But, I mean, Joe's got scoreboard today.
Like, no, today
he actually
legit.
Got scoreboard.
Yeah, when he said it, it seemed like it made more sense than others. But, yeah, he definitely has credibility with that one, I would say, yes.
I think it's in play. I wouldn't bet on that, but I don't think it's a terrible take.
Did you watch that game last night?
No, not really. I was in the airport. I got stuck in the Chicago airport.
Ooh.
Got stuck in the Chicago airport. Yeah. I had my layover was in Chicago, and then the flight kept getting delayed. We ended up leaving around like 11.
Weather?
No. It was like they had a problem getting wherever it was coming from to Chicago, and then something was wrong with the plane, so they had to switch our plane. But yeah, I didn't get to bed about 2:30 yesterday.
That sucks.
But I mean, who cares? No one cares about my.
No,
problems.
I was watching that game last night, and away
I didn't watch it.
but the Braves put a 3-spot on the Rangers, and I'm like, sweet, like they could go under.
Up.
They could go under 500, yeah. And as bad as the Astros are playing, they can stay within arm's length of catching the Rangers for the division.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I turned it over to the basketball game for like. A couple minutes, I pop back over, and it's 4-3 Rangers, and they hit a couple of bombs. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I didn't watch it, but I did notice. I was looking at the score every now and then, and I saw that the Braves were winning, and then I saw the Rangers were up late, and I was like, oh. Because I wanted to see what the Astros were going to be today, because the Rangers won, so the Astros went from 4.5 back to 5 back. It's actually one of my goods. One of my goods is they're only 5 back. Yeah. They're only 5 games back. Do you know the Astros were 5 back last year? The Astros are 5 back.
More than that.
Guess the date. I went back last year, reverse engineered it, 162 forward, and looked at the last time that they were 5 games back. The latest date on the calendar last year that they trailed by 5 games. Yes, they were more, but what was the latest date that they trailed by 5?
I want to say it was in July.
Yeah, I was going to say July also. I'll say July 21st.
Blangers, you want to Price is Right them?
Yeah, I'm going to say July 22nd.
Oh, Brian wins. It was actually July 1st.
Oh. Okay.
July 1st was the last time that the Astros were 5 back. So, like, yeah, it's uncharted territory for the Astros to be 9 games under 500, but it's not uncharted territory for them to be 5 back. In fact, they experienced it last year way deeper into the season than currently. So, like, that's the one thing if you're looking for a little bit of optimism,
yep.
Which I know a lot of people are looking for a whole lot of optimism right now. Here's why yesterday's game was a microcosm. We'll get to the good, bad, and ugly, 713-780-3776, a bunch of them texting in. Yesterday was a microcosm of the season, and you mentioned some of this earlier. Christian Javier got hurt, so, like, this is a microcosm of all of the starting pitchers that got hurt. Hunter Brown went out and didn't pitch all that well. The Astros currently have the worst ERA in the entire American League, probably all of baseball. I didn't look at the NL, but probably the entire Major League Baseball. You're also having to use fringe big leaguers nonstop. The Astros have used, I think it's 22 pitchers. Last year they used 23 the entire season, and a lot of the 22 have been fringe guys that might not belong in the big leagues. I like Hunter Brown's potential. Hasn't really pleased me this year. Hunter Brown's probably not a big leaguer right now. He's not pitching like one right now. He's a fringe big leaguer right now. If you had your full staff, he's probably in Sugarland. If everybody was healthy, he might be in Sugarland with
might
the way
be.
That
I
he's
think
pitching.
He still might be in your pen.
I don't know. Like, he gets shelled. But, yeah, but whatever. But, like, it's not really the point. Like, okay, I'll concede that. But then who do you go to in the bullpen? Sean Dubin, a fringe big league pitcher. Taylor Scott, Taylor with an E, not an O, a fringe big league pitcher. And then you finish it up with Brandon Belak, a fringe big league pitcher. And then your offense is awful. You don't hit with runners in scoring position. Like, everybody, what's wrong with the Astros? And we try to pinpoint one specific thing where you can look at yesterday's game and there's 4 or 5 different things. Bad starting pitching. Your pitchers are hurt. You're throwing fringe big leaguers. You can't hit in opportune times. Yesterday, they didn't hit at all. You're getting zero production from first base. Like, there is a long list of things that are – what's wrong with the Astros? A lot. A lot is wrong with the Astros.
It's not just one thing, fix it, put some tape on it, and call it good. There's just too many things steamrolling right now to where I've seen a lot of people, oh, we're jinxed, we're cursed, it's over. No, it's not that bad either, but – it is a comedy of errors. It continues to stack up, and it's not like when we were talking about in the offseason. Well, if they shore up the middle of the bullpen, maybe they add one more bat. This team's got everything they need to chase the World Series. Now you're wondering if they could just chase 500 and how quickly they could possibly get back there, and each time you think they're starting to make momentum to get closer, they actually take another step back.
And it's not even really momentum. It's like this faux momentum that we're trying to create. Because, like, what are we talking about? We're talking about one critical win. And they've had 3 different instances of this where they've had an opportunity. We're like, we're trying to create the momentum. It was the first one was the Blair Henley start, I think. Whenever Blair Henley in Arlington, he came out, got one out, and they were down like 5-2 after one inning. They stormed back and won. I think it was 10-5. Great momentum. Swept at Kansas City. The second one was whenever they won the Sunday game against Texas again, after they lost the first 2 games of the series, and then they won the final 2 games of the series. They were like, okay, great, split the series. Here we go. Here come the Astros. And then I can't remember who they played after that, but it didn't go very well. It went bad for the Astros. They lost the series immediately
Atlanta.
After that.
They got swept.
They got swept by Atlanta. So that's right. They got swept in back-to-back momentum games. And then their third momentum game was Friday. Justin Verlander back on the mound. You got your guy. He might be a little bit long in the tooth, but he's your leader. And we found out after the game that he's giving like this little motivational speech in the clubhouse where Dubon's saying that we need to get our heads out of our where Chaz McCormick, we all got to do better. So it's like, cool, Verlander's back. He's a leader. You're winning game one. You should be able to take at least one of the final two in Washington, and then you lose the next two. So every time, and I'm not even going to call it momentum. I'm going to call it like this. We're hoping that it's a spark that leads
to
momentum.
It's like a slump buster, right?
Yeah, you could call it that. You could call it a spark. That you're hoping it's the spark to a winning streak. You're hoping it's a spark to the momentum. And every time they have the spark to the momentum, they just pour water on it. Yep. It's a huge wet blanket on top of the spark, and it's no momentum at all.
Yeah, no, you look at it, and it's rightful that it's rightfully so that everybody is starting to point at different things because there's so many things to point to. But the reason why, no matter what happens early in the season, that I think the show collectively feels like they're going to turn it around. There is going to be that point. We just can't pinpoint when, or you need to start seeing some guys come back before you can even considering if. It's because there's just too much talent on paper. And forget paper. You're getting more than you thought you were getting out of Peña. You're getting Yiner to hit like you had hoped he would hit. You got Maldi out of the lineup. You know, you got Altuve and Yordan and Tucker starting. All these guys are all positives. But it's got to be where you start getting the starting pitching so that you can strengthen your bullpen as well so you can figure the rest of it out. And you just don't know when any of that's going to start figuring itself out with guys coming back.
713-780-ESPN. What frustrates you about this team? Good, bad, is there any good? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Guys, I want to tell you right now about Allstate Siding and Windows, because if you're looking all over Houston for high-quality windows and great siding at affordable prices, all you got to do is do what I did and call Houston's expert windows and siding people. That's Allstate Windows and Siding. Allstate Windows and Siding replaced my old windows. It's unbelievable. First of all, the curb appeal just made the house look a lot younger and a lot more modern, and it's phenomenal. But the thing that really made us want to make the change in the first place is exactly what we're seeing now. That is up to 40% savings on our energy bills. And that tough, secure, hard shell for all the different weather elements you're going to face in Houston. From hurricane season to trying to keep the heat out in the summer and keep it warm in the winter, everything that you need is under one roof with Allstate Windows and Siding. And they got all the deals, too, because we're all looking for savings. 30% off of windows, $2,500 off a complete siding job. Free estimates available. It's family-run for over four generations. Mary runs it at the office. Her brother gets out there and hands-on delivers, coming to you and tell you exactly how they can help you. You just got to call them to get the process started. 832-204-1936. That's 832-204-1936. Or you can go to their website, allstatesidingandwindows.com. They have discounts for military personnel and first responders. They are phenomenal at taking care of Houstonians. But the best thing you need to do, because it doesn't cost you a cent, have them come out to your house. Tell them what you're considering. Maybe it's a combination of siding and windows. Maybe it's just one or the other. They're going to tell you exactly what you need, where you need it, and the best opportunities for them to help you do what you want to do. Check them out today, 832-204-1936, allstatesidingandwindows.com.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. They're saying on the Twitch, I've never seen Joe George and Steve Bartman in the same room. It's a good point. I've never seen them in the same room. You know, I thought of a nickname we could use for Joe and Brian, the tag team.
Oh, for our tag team?
The Lovable Losers.
Hang on. Why are we losers?
Well, he's a Cubs fan.
I'm not a Cubs fan.
Eh.
I'm the lovable and he's the loser.
It's like food coloring. You just drop a little bit in there and it takes over the entire composition.
You drop a little
of
bit
liquid.
Of the loser and yeah. It taints the whole thing?
I think so.
Wow.
I think so.
The Bounce Brothers?
I'd accept this nickname if I'm the lovable and he's the loser.
That's a good call. We'll go with that.
All right, there we go.
Yeah, you're the lovable, he's the loser, lovable losers. Junior Bronco says lead the league in hits, the Astros. They do. They also lead all of baseball with runners in scoring position. Or not runners in scoring position, left on base.
Yeah, leading them, yep.
The
lineup construction.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point.
I know. I'm mostly having fun with it, but he's certainly going to. I'm sure if he has a victory lap, then I'm sure he.
I think he tried to dunk on me today.
Oh, did he?
I think. I don't know. So I tweeted out.
Wait, how do you not know?
I don't know. I can't read it. I can.
Why? Because he's actually blocked?
No. I can physically read it. I can't read if it's a dunk or not.
Oh, I see.
Like, I'll read it to you guys. See what y'all think. American League team leaders was my tweet, and runners and left on base. The Astros have 101 runners left on base. Tigers are 159. So it's like a convincing lead. The Astros are, oh my goodness, way out in front of everybody else. And I do think that the line of construction is fair. I think that batting order is incredibly overrated. Is Yordan Alvarez hitting fourth mean that the Astros are scoring more runs? Is it Alex Bregman? Is it Yainer Diaz who still can't hit with runners in scoring position? I think it's more the latter than the former, but I do think it's a fair point. I do think it's a fair point. Like, what would you say? Is the Astros, they lead the league in hits. They're second in the American League in OPS, but they lead the American League by 22 runners left on base over anybody else in the American League. Is that more Yordan batting second, not middle of the order? Or is it more guys like Alex Bregman have struggled and Yainer Diaz can't hit with runners in scoring position?
I think it's the lack of production from everybody in the lineup, including Bregman. You got to throw Abreu in there because he started out in the early portion of the season higher in the lineup, but he's had ample opportunities. Everybody's had their shot.
Yeah, I think
I would
it's
go
more,
with the latter.
I think it's more the latter. I don't think it's Yordan hitting second. I think that
because
Bregman has been awful.
It's not like his RBI, like we in the past have talked about what his on pace was for his RBI total. And Yordan's RBI total was still on pace to be, I haven't checked in a few days, but it was still on pace to be like north of 130. So that wasn't the issue.
Yeah. I think it's the latter too. Like if I had to, like what, why are the Astros second in OPS, lead the league in hits, like Junior Bronco said? I'll have to fact check that. I don't know if I can trust Junior Bronco.
No,
just
believe
kidding.
I read it too. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. If you say it, I can believe it. Junior Bronco's not so much. I kid. But why do they lead the league in hits, second in OPS, but then they're below average in runs in the American League? Why? Like, is it lineup construction? Is it who you have in critical RBI situations or felling? If you flipped Bregman and Yordan, let's say Bregman bats second, Yordan bats fourth, well, there's fewer RBI chances for Yordan now, like, because Bregman's been getting out. You could even throw Jose Altuve in the mix. He had, like, 5 home runs and 7 RBIs at the start of the series and leads you in OPS. So if we're talking about you need your best slugger in the middle of the order, well, Jose Altuve's been your best slugger.
Yeah, you got to slide him down then?
So, like, I think the batting order generally is extremely overrated. I will have the conversation with anybody, and it's a conversation that's fun. It's fantastic banter. I like having it. I just think that it's wildly overrated, and I don't think that the Astros' issue of, like, why aren't they scoring runs is related to Yordan batting second. I think it's related to Bregman's struggles and the entire team's ability with runners in scoring position. That's just my take on it. Yeah, but here was Jeremy Booth, because that's who you were referring to, Brian. He quote tweeted that, which a lot of times people will use a quote tweet as a way to dunk on somebody, which is really 100%. Not a great. I'm anti quote tweet. I'll do it sometimes like national types. Quote tweeting on like local people to me is a very, very bad look.
I'll do it if you're saying something fun, fine.
But
to
like dunk on somebody, I think is incredibly cowardly. Let's engage in a conversation. Like if you disagree, let's have the chat in the thread. Like I'm totally okay with that. But he had quote tweeted this. He said, I'll say this again. This is Jeremy Booth. To my tweet about the Astros leading the American League with runners left on base. I'll say this again. There are human beings and the probabilities being run to get someone extra at bats aren't worth it if those at bats don't convert to wins. You know what war is, right? Love it or hate it, it's wins. Also, Astros are on pace for 1,274.87 runners left on. I know your pace is your thing. I think it's a dunk.
I think
he's trying.
I think he's dunking on me.
I wasn't convinced it was a dunk until the very end.
Oh, he responded. I didn't realize he responded. Because I said, was this directed at me? I can't tell since it was a quote tweet, not a response. But he did respond. I didn't realize that he responded. He said, it's in reference to the extended comments you made about the lineup construction not being an issue, the run production of Alvarez being on pace for huge numbers, and those things in direct opposition of my at Jason Bristol and Zach position that it was about total lineup productivity and protecting players and only being about wins in the end.
So did he go listening?
I guess he did try to dunk on me.
But was he listening or reading? Or?
Well, he was definitely reading the tweets because he said it's – well, I guess it could be – both.
Yeah. Yeah, I was curious. I mean, thanks for listening, Jeremy Booth.
But he didn't think I know what war is?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm like super pro war.
You're super
pro when it comes to
analytic
baseball
stats. Yes.
Yeah, I like the numbers. I know what war is.
Yep.
I guess he did try to dunk on me. I didn't realize he responded.
I wasn't convinced it was a dunk until that closing line of.
I know you're on pace, guy.
Yeah.
I was doing the you're on pace.
That's definitely where he makes it personal.
Yeah. He definitely is taking a shot at the very end.
Which is fine. I take a bunch of shots. I have to be willing to receive some shots as well. But I'm going to respond during the break. I didn't realize he had responded. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. 2304.
I mean, we didn't call him a clown.
Say what you want. I don't know if Jeremy Booth is wrong. I don't know that he's wrong. Some of the ways that, like, you know, you can't win a championship with your best hitter hitting second, blah, blah, that's not true. Like, Trey Turner was the best hitter, or Corey Seager was the best hitter for the Rangers. He hit second. We can go look at the previous 10 World Series champions. I'm sure there's a good amount of the best hitters that bat second. Now, for this team, is Jordan better in the four spot or the two spot? I think it's a fair conversation. Personally, I don't care. Like, well, right now, I like two and four for Jordan.
And I think right now that's more dependent upon the other guys in the lineup than it is on Jordan. I think Jordan's going to do what he's supposed to do more times than not, no matter where he's hitting. It's just, you know, do you feel like he's your only option? I mean, especially if Altuve's going to stay in the leadoff spot. Tucker seems to be heating up a little bit. Bregman seems to be figuring out some things. But if you don't feel like those guys are going to give you the best chance, whoever's in cleanup, then, you know, figure it out.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that there is some weight to lineup construction. That's where I think that Jeremy Booth is right. And I've never said that he was wrong. What I think that batting order a lot of times is overrated, and I don't think that the problem currently with the Houston Astros is that Jordan's sitting second, not fourth. I think it's Bregman and the overall team runners in scoring position. And in fact, you know who has the best on-base percentage on the Astros? Jose Altuve. Like, he's hitting directly behind the guy that gets on base the most for the Houston Astros. So he's had plenty of opportunities with runners on base.
But he's not going to, yeah, his rebuttal can be, but he's not, you know, if he's just getting on, he's hitting singles, then he's not in scoring position
sure.
when you're
done. But if he's hitting behind Bregman, nobody's getting on in front of him.
Right.
So, like, what's the issue exactly? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Gets to some of the goods, the bads, and the uglies here. Bad and ugly, Jose Abreu, defense and offense.
Yeah, he's, he's the easiest target, but how can you not? It doesn't matter if this team was, you know, three games over 500 or where they currently sit. You can't. It's unmistakable. You can't turn the cheek and know that he was a hot button from the time you signed him. The money is something that everybody is very familiar with. How he was signed and who did it is also going to be a hot button with a lot of people. And he is still the poster child for the Jim Crane, Jeff Bagwell, Reggie Jackson, et cetera, group think that got you the three moves that they made a year ago. And he and Montero are going to be scrutinized for that, if nothing else. This is putrid. This is ridiculous. This is the stuff that, you know, guys ending their Major League Baseball careers are written by, the way he's playing right now. And it's unmistakable that every time he comes up, it's like a Maldi effect where you just go, well, here's an out. Nice, you know, who's next?
Yeah. The by the way, WAR, the number that Jeremy Booth referenced to me, you know that Jose Abreu is on pace to have the single worst season in Major League Baseball history? The highest recorded WAR in Major League Baseball history was a guy named Jim Levy in 1933. He had a minus.
I saw him play a couple times.
I admire that. I tip my cap at that joke. That was a good one. 9.8 there.
Joke, yeah.
That was good. Well, I like that. We're going
to
give that a 9.75. He had a minus -4 WAR in 1933, which, okay, bear with me for a second. Mm-hmm. Jose Abreu right now, Fangraphs WAR, is on pace for a minus -7.7.
Oof.
He's on pace to nearly double the worst WAR in Major League Baseball history. That, like, Jose, like, we talk about his struggles and stuff, and, like, yes, it's bad. You go look at WAR by position, which I did that today. The Astros have the worst WAR at first base by almost double the team that's ahead of them for second to last. So, like, and then we talk about his average, 0.68, whatever it is. We have the GoFundMe up for Jose Abreu, all of these things. Jose Abreu right now is statistically on pace for the worst season in Major League Baseball history by nearly double the previous worst player in Major League Baseball history.
It is so bad that when he goes up to the plate, I'm hoping to see him square up a foul ball. Just make contact, even if it's a foul ball, make contact with a fastball that's over 90 to show me that there's a chance. There's some slim glimmer of hope that he can make contact with a fastball again. to let me believe that last year can happen again this year. He can sit down for a while. He can come back and he can at least be major league respectable regardless of what his salary is. And I just haven't seen it. It's there's no doubt he's in his own head.
Yeah.
And how could you not be?
Yeah. It might be all of the things, though. It might be he's washed. He's in his own head. People have thrown out the injury theory, I guess. You know, hoping that it's injury because it would at least have some explanation.
His feelings are hurt. That's where he's injured.
I think everything is. Dana Brown on Astros radio, Chandler Rome had the tweet. This was Dana Brown answering a question about Jose Abreu over the weekend. Listen, there's no way to sugarcoat this. He's scuffling right now, and I think he knows it. It's wearing on him. I'm sure it's wearing on our hitting coaches. The frustration mounts, but ultimately, hopefully, he can turn this thing around. I think we're going to have to give him some time off, maybe platoon a little bit, but just to see if one of the other guys can get hot and give him some time off. Maybe he can catch fire after a few days off. It's tough to watch when you see him go through these struggles because you know he's such a gamer and he's a competitor, and you look at what he did toward the end of last year. All of that was exciting to start off the way he's starting off right now. It's frustrating for him. I guarantee you he's frustrated, but he's got to climb out of it or else we're going to have to mix and match because it's tough to keep going in that direction. So he says they might have to start mix and matching. Mentions they're going to give him a few days off here and there. Mentions platooning. That's good news, I guess. The negative of that is that Singleton's not a whole lot better. He is better, but not a whole lot better. And then if you're doing the platoon thing, Abreu's a righty. He's probably going to start against lefties. John Singleton's actually better in his career against lefties than righties. So, and they refused to play Dubon there. Like,
I don't understand that either. Is it size? What? I mean, he's got a glove. He's played the infield. He can pick baseballs. You know, you've tried Yiner over there, and he was a work in progress as you were working with him while he was actually playing over there. Dubon, you would think, is just naturally gifted and better at already fielding the position. And no matter what he does defensively, offensively, he's a huge upgrade.
If you can be a gold glove utility infielder and a finalist at second base, you can learn to play first base. He might have some rough goings early with footwork and things like
that. What was Yuli before he was a first baseman?
He was a third baseman.
Yeah, and he's an infielder.
Shortstop, too.
He's an infielder. So to your point, if you can play infield, you can learn to play first base.
I think the reason they don't want to do that is because, like, Mauricio Dubon would be a below-average offensive first baseman. Like, I think that's the reason they don't want to do that.
So it's
because it's not
his,
that's the thing. He's probably your best offensive first baseman, even though he's below league average. Joey Loperfido struggling right now in Sugar Land.
Played in center over the weekend.
Yeah, dive and catch.
I saw that.
And then they had the Cabbage. Cabbage is doing okay. Like, but still, like, is it an upgrade over Singleton? Like, their first base position's not very good.
Because it's a no-brainer that anybody's an upgrade over Abreu.
Yeah.
But you got to get close to major league respectability at first base for your entire offensive production.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. More good, more bad, more ugly. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Good, bad, ugly. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Our guy, Willie. Willie, you're in the hive of the Bees. What's up?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Always.
I'd like to see Pena hit second and Alex go to fifth. And they did pretty good with that a couple of years.
Where are you putting Yordan? Where are you putting Yordan, Willie?
Yordan?
Yeah.
I put him back at third.
Okay.
Yordan at third, like when in 22 when they won the series. And Tucker at four.
Okay.
And I don't like how they make too many errors, and I don't like how with two strikes, the Astros used to be the best hitting team in the league with two strikes. They just swing at bad pitches too much. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Thanks, Willie. At this point, when do we get to a Joe Espada is just going to start experimenting and tinkering more?
Because it's also a sign of desperation, though.
Yeah, it is.
So
because
it's a very fine line.
If it works, then it was the right move at the right time. If it doesn't, you're right. Then you're grasping at straws. You're looking for just anything that might give you one little spark that it gives you a glimmer of hope again. And I don't know that we're there yet, because we've seen improvements from Bregman and Tucker and some of the guys that we were concerned about, not named Abreu, to where, you know, and Chaz had a couple of hits. So you see guys that are coming out of it. Yes, Pena's been has had a really nice start to this season. And yes, he has hit in the two hole before. Do you really want to move him right now with what he's been doing and where he's doing it? And he's comfortable. To me, that would be a desperate move. I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah. I don't hate Willie's idea. Like, Pena in the past, going into this year, I would never bat him second. And I know people, well, I love the idea of Pena second because he hits there. Like, you pull up his Baseball Reference. What spot in the batting order does he hit well? Second's his best one. But he doesn't get on base enough, nearly enough, to bat second coming into this year. But if this is the new Jeremy Pena, if this is the Jeremy Pena, and look, he's not going to hit 344. That was one of my goods, is Jeremy Pena hitting really, really good. Now, I mean, these numbers probably are not sustainable. 344 average, top 10 in baseball, 372 on base. Like, if he's going to be a version of this Jeremy Pena, where he's one of your top three or four on-base percentage guys, okay. I'm okay with the idea of hitting Pena second. I don't hate Willie's point. Like, drop Bregman down. Bregman's been awful. Bregman's been really, really bad. He's cost you a lot. And you know, we're having the conversation about lineup construction and do the Astros stink because Jordan's hitting second, or is it because the rest of the guys aren't producing with runners in scoring position, like Bregman, like Yiner? Yiner's having a good offensive season, except with runners in scoring position or runners on base. Mm-hmm. Same thing with, like, Chaz has been not very good so far. So, like, what is the reason for the offense, the lack of runs? Because the other stuff has been good. I think it's more the latter. But if you had Jeremy Pena batting second because he's swinging a hot bat, okay, I'm okay with that. Now, there's the other side of the conversation with, you know, well, you know, maybe he's having this success because of where he's hitting now, and why are you going to screw with a guy who's having this success with where he's at?
Not only that, when we've talked about him in the past, when he's moved around, that's when we've seen the negative shift, where it does seem mentally that it takes something out of him. That's why he was so jacked up to be hitting second, and that's why the results were there when he was hitting second. But overall, over the entire body of a full season, I think we all could reasonably expect that he wasn't going to keep that up and he wasn't going to stay there. So at what point do you want to try it? Are you just going to say you're going to try it and see how it goes? Or are you going to wait, expecting that on the flip side, that Bregman's going to, you know, find his way out of it like he normally does, and that Tucker's going to continue to keep getting hot, and that you're going to leave your top five alone?
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is, like, is this Astros team going to be good if Alex Bregman is bad? Like, if Bregman's bad all year, will this Astros team be good? I doubt it. Like, I don't think so. I think for the Astros to be a playoff team, they need, like, good-ish Alex Bregman. So a lot of it is, too, like, well, what do you have to do to get Alex Bregman going? That was a Dusty Baker move. Like, Dusty Baker all the time, like, whoever he needed to get going, he'd bat him second in front of Yordan, mm-hmm. so that he would give that hitter protection, and that hitter would try to find some sort of hot streak. He did it with Yuli. He did it with Jeremy Pena.
I would say it's your definition of good. I think they can still be good if Bregman doesn't completely figure it out, but I don't think they're chasing a World Series. I think they can make a wild card. I think they can get in. I think that there's still enough talent in that offensive lineup that if the other guys keep going and get going, that, you know, Yiner with runners in scoring position and Tucker just continues to keep building on what he's starting to put together. I think there's enough talent offensively. They get to the playoffs some way, somehow. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they go very far.
7-7-4-4 Altuve may be seeing better pitches with Yordan behind him, though. Good point.
Yeah.
It's a good point. Like, that is part of the reason that Altuve is going nuts so far this year, is because he's getting great pitches because Jordan's hitting behind him. Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. There's probably a smart part of that. I wouldn't be opposed, because I think that you need to get Bregman going, so I'm not in favor of demoting him. Although, if you're looking to win one baseball game, yeah, like, you probably should demote him, but you're not there yet. It's still early in the year. If this was Game 7 of the World Series, let's bump him down the lineup. But, like, this is a marathon. I think the Dusty Baker move is you're actually looking for ways to get Alex Bregman going. I wouldn't be opposed to Bregman actually moving up in the order. And I know this sounds crazy, but hang with me for a second. What is Bregman struggling with right now? Bregman's struggling driving runs in. He's hitting with runners in scoring position. He's pressing, trying to knock them in. How about Bregman, instead of driving in those runs, sets the table? Why don't you put him in one of the top two spot? And it sounds crazy because Altuve's been swinging a hot bat. You don't want to mess with him. People don't love the idea of Yordan. That's kind of hit or miss. It's kind of a polarizing topic.
You don't want Yordan in the three hole, and I understand that, because he comes up a lot with two outs.
Two outs, nobody on.
Yeah, so I don't know that I want to put him in the two spot and then have Yordan hitting back at three, but I almost thought about hitting him at three.
Jordan or Bregman?
Bregman.
Yeah, after.
Right,
yeah,
after,
see,
Jordan, and sandwiched between him and Jordan and Tucker.
If I was filling out the lineup, and this is, I would have said this at the start of the year, not just now, but I would also do it now. I would lead off Bregman. I'd bat Jordan second. I'd bat Altuve third. And I'd bat Tucker fourth. That would be my batting order. I think I did say that at the beginning of the year.
I think it's primarily, too, because of the fact that, you know, Altuve's got such pop at the top, too. I mean, it's not like you're taking a guy that's just hitting 300 leading off the lineup for you. He's got so much – he has the ability to drive in so many runs because he still has – his pop's actually gotten better through his career to where you could put him there and you could feel real comfortable with him hitting for average and for pop.
Well, a lot of the conversation with Jordan batting second is he's not going to have these RBI situations, right? Like, mm-hmm. Well, you know, he's not going to drive in runs, blah, 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 blah. Jose Altuve's got a better OPS than Jordan Alvarez. Jose Altuve has 5 home runs and he has 7 RBIs. So, like, if we're going to have the conversation about Jordan, we should be having the conversation about Altuve. Is Altuve, who has 5 home runs and leads you in OPS, is that where you want that type of player in the leadoff spot?
Yeah, I don't know that we were going to have this conversation to start the year off, but and especially coming off the injuries he had last year. Right now, Jose Altuve is one of the best offensive baseball players in baseball and in the American League. And if you want to capitalize on that while your team is down in the dumps and their Dobbers are down and they're not playing good baseball, he's a guy that you can consider doing some things with, too, just to try and capitalize on how hot he's been and the fact that he's come through in situations that you needed him to.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Bert, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up, Bert?
Hey, guys. I know how to get Alex Bregman going and Yasto's going. Trey Bregman with some prospects.
Yeah. What's the value of him right now, though, Bert? Like, I mean, what kind of car do you drive? What year is the car that you drive?
They're gonna get something for him.
Yeah, but Bert. What year is the car that you drive? You can lie to me if you want. I don't
know. How much would he get if he had a bad year?
Last chance, Bert. What car do you want to tell us? What year car do you want to tell us that you drive?
2017.
Okay, 2017. So it has less value now in 2024 than it did in 2018. Would the better of time been to have sold it in 18 or 24? It would have been 18. You don't want to get, like, low return on something that's been incredibly devalued. You don't want to sell a commodity when it's low. Trading Alex Bregman when he's at his absolute worst makes no sense from an organization point of view.
But let's also be realistic, Jeremy. He's in the final year of his deal, so you're not going to get anything back in return either.
So you're just throwing in players who are very, very bad that nobody wants. Like, Bregman has the most value of those three. Appreciate the call, Bert. And I understand the frustrations there, and you don't want these guys on your team. I get it. Alex Bregman has some value. Of those three, he has the most value because people understand his track record in the back of his baseball
card. But you got to re-sign him.
Yeah, but I mean...
But you know that you know the traditionally how trades work.
Sure, but he's got more value than Presley and Abreu.
Oh, like, that's a different story.
Jose Abreu is untradeable.
Right.
You couldn't get a bucket of curveballs for Jose Abreu.
No, but from a Bregman standpoint, if he had a year or two left, now a team trading for him knows at least we got him under control for a year or two to where
sure.
We're not just renting him. But he's a straight rental right now.
His value has never been lower mm-hmm. on the trade market. Is it greater than Presley? Yeah.
Sure, yes.
Is it greater than Jose Abreu? Blankers has more trade value than Jose Abreu. And I mean that sincerely. He does. There's not a single team in baseball that would trade a piece of paper for Jose Abreu. Why? Because he's on the books for $19.5 million this year and next year. They would have to eat the entire contract, the Astros would. And at that point, I'm still not sure somebody would do it. But if they ate the entire contract, they could get nothing.
The White Sox would do it.
I don't know.
If they ate the entire contract, the White Sox would do it to try and sell tickets.
I don't think they care.
I do.
Sell
tickets though.
They also have prospects that they want to play.
Maybe we don't think a lot of the people of Chicago, but who's spending their hard earned money to come out and see Jose Abreu? Yeah.
He's beloved in that city though enough that you could bring him back if you're getting him for free. You bring him back. It's the home. You know, it's a homecoming deal. You don't have to play him all that often.
But he's
the one team that would
spot.
Put him on the roster. Yeah, but well, at this point,
I don't even
point,
care about
suck.
The roster point.
Yeah,
I just, I don't.
No, I would. If I'm running a team
I'm talking specifically from the White Sox. They're trash either way. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but they might have a prospect at first that they want to play. Or they might have prospects they want to get at bats.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. And I can't put myself in the idea of believing that anyone is coming out to pay and see Jose Abreu, that he's boosting any ticket sales with the way he's playing.
I agree with that.
But it's like, you know, okay, we saw
Andrew Vaughn's their first baseman. Like, That guy needs at-bats.
He does. But, okay, then put him on the bench as a pinch hitter and a designated hitter sometimes, or do something with him. You don't have to even play him. But
that's a roster spot.
My only point is when you're that bad, yes, ticket sales do start to matter. And things to just get some kind of positivity on the baseball side matter.
So Houston, you Jose Abreu once every, like, once a week is going to sell tickets? I don't think so.
I think that you said, is there a team out there that would even, if you could get it for free, I think that's the only chance you got.
I don't think there's a single team in baseball that would take Jose Abreu for free. A single one. If the Astros ate the $39 million on Jose, and I know it's a little less than that because the Astros have played 20-something games, I don't think there's a team in baseball that would employ Jose Abreu for free to be on their bench. I don't. He's on pace to have the greatest worst season ever.
You know, the back of his baseball card.
The greatest worst season ever. Not even on pace to have the greatest worst season ever. He's on pace to have the greatest worst season ever by almost double the previous guy.
It's not good. I was trying to throw up one team that might be coming up to bat.
No doubt. At least Maldi gave you intangibles. At least Maldi was at a position where you don't need a lot of offense.
Well, the Cubs used to be the lovable losers. You could put Maldi and Abreu next to each other in the lineup and people could watch them both suck.
Would they sell tickets at Wrigley is the question, though.
Yes, they would at Wrigley. certainly would at Wrigley.
713-78. Anybody could sell tickets at Wrigley. You just put on a Cubs uniform, you can sell tickets at Wrigley. 713-780-3776. Let's get to your goods, your bads, your uglies. A lot of reaction on the text line. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Guys, another word for one of our newest sponsors, Vanderford Air and Plumbing, that we welcome into the ESPN family because we know what they can do for you. Local family-run business that can take care of all your air conditioning and plumbing needs. Whether you need a new system or a tankless water heater or a part for your HVAC or you're looking to replace those too, they take care of all of it. You know how it's great when you know that there's a company you can trust and they do more than just one thing. So they don't just do HVAC and AC, but they do plumbing, tankless water heaters, and so much more. And the biggest thing that I keep telling you about, they offer guaranteed same-day service. When you call within 24 hours, they will be there to you because they know you need them, and 0% interest financing or a low monthly payment option on new products and on service work. And that's another big key. 100% satisfaction guaranteed is part of their vernacular on a daily basis. They want to make sure you're satisfied, and they have a 5-step guarantee or your money back. Vanderford Air and Plumbing are going to give you an estimate for both the repair and for the new product or system. They're going to be honest with you. They're going to do great work. They're going to make sure the repair, the product, the parts all work and the system is working as good as it can work, or you will not pay. Check them out today, VanderfordAir.com. That's VanderfordAir.com.